Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And as usual, we really don't know what we're going to talk about. At least Hansen might know what we're going to talk about. I'm just generally befuddled. Probably because I watched the Instagram video that Antonio Brown, or the Instagram Live that Antonio Brown put out. I'm very confused. And I'm trying to understand how having a USA football team would make us love football more than we already do.
All right, so
I didn't think it was possible for us to love football more than we already did.
Probably isn't, but
America.
Important question here. When was this video?
Yesterday.
Okay, because this is Friday morning. The timeline
yes.
is
oh, this
very
is what we're doing again. We're the
critical.
We're fighting the time-space continuum.
Well, no, it's just that you have to do it with Antonio Brown in the last month, because last week we taped the show on Friday, and we were talking about what are the Raiders going to do with this headache. And by the time
I just snorted. Yeah.
By the time our show aired Sunday night, the Raiders had made his decision, and now he was a Patriot.
And there's part of me that, like, when it happened, where was I? I was somewhere, because it would be weird if I wasn't anywhere. Was it Sunday when the Patriots signed him?
It was Saturday
afternoon.
It was
Saturday. So I was at a baseball field in Staten Island, and it was like, somebody said something, and then the next thing you know, everybody's talking about the Patriots getting Antonio Brown and how good are they going to be, and just kind of bizarre to see how the dominoes fall, right? Because you look, and the Patriots at that point now have Saturday what appears to be a completely stacked wide receiver core, from Brown to Julian Edelman, or Jules as everybody calls him, to Demaryius Thomas, to
Josh Gordon.
There's like this abundance of riches, and how many footballs can you actually play with? And this is going to be the biggest test of Bill Belichick's ability to stress team over individual and all that. And so the Patriots do what they logically should do. They trade Demaryius Thomas to the Jets.
Get a sixth-round pick.
Get a pick, and hey, everybody's happy. We're good. And then, as, I don't know, it's now there's more Antonio Brown controversy that goes along with this, and rather than simply just I haven't followed anything about the court case, frankly. I'm kind of fatigued about the whole Antonio Brown soap opera, so I had this internal debate of, do we even mention the name, because now he feels like LeVar Ball to me,
right?
Because he's kind of just he's now gotten to a point where he's looking at this like he's an entertainer, and I am a complete celebrity, and honestly, and the other thing that's sort of bizarre is now he's recording the Instagram videos and almost trying to be, hey, look at me, I'm eccentric, I'm different, I'm unique.
Oh, he's established that.
But like, now we're at a point where I think we're all kind of sick of him, and he hasn't even played a down yet this year. And I made a bold prediction last week where I said, I don't think he wants to play football. I guess I could amend what I said. I didn't think he wanted to be a Raider, which that played out just fine.
He accomplished that goal. And again, what I thought was he didn't want to attend training camp with the Raiders.
Yes.
I did think he wanted to play football, but now it does seem like he's got this huge priority of this social media star. But I missed this latest video. So what was he saying about USA football?
It was just a bizarre rambling. Somebody, I'm sure, has transcribed it somewhere. I don't need to go into depth. But it was just him on Instagram basically just walking around training camp and giving people a tour and talking about football needs more love. If we had a USA football team that was on the international stage, then maybe we'd get more love.
Who would they be playing?
I don't know. I mean, then that's you go out and then you lose to Serbia, but that's a story for another day. And it turns out that Serbia's boast was completely, they lived up to their end.
Yes.
They boasted that they were going to beat Team USA, and look what happened. They beat Team USA. But again, this is what I do. I digress. I don't know. I don't think Bill Belichick knows what Instagram is, but I'm confident that there are human beings who have told Bill Belichick about Instagram and have probably briefed him on the number of followers that Antonio Brown has, and the fact that people aren't necessarily talking about the Patriots, but they're talking about AB all the time. And I don't think that's probably wearing all that well with Belichick.
And this reminds me, the first time we heard about Antonio Brown in social media, I believe, was back on the Steelers days when he released a video of Mike Tomlin in the locker room addressing the team. And Mike Tomlin was not very pleased with that.
Yeah, it's there are some times that you can use social media as a wonderful tool. There are most times, and I say this as a human being who makes his living off of digital media, there are most times that social media drags us into a place that we just shouldn't be, because we were not created, regardless of your belief about how we were created, we weren't created to stare into phones all the time or to stare into monitors all the time. We were created to have interactions with each other and experience the natural world. And when, so there are times, and it's not all the time, and I'm going to say it's probably 15% of the time that social media can be used for good. The other 85%, it's not used for anything that's super beneficial. This falls on the far end of that 85% where really, and again, I don't know anything about the court case, and I'm not going to adjudicate anything here because I don't know anything about it. The fact of the matter is that Antonio Brown was accused of sexual assault and is now a defendant in a civil case. Those are the facts of the matter. The things that I am most interested in is he's out on social media basically putting himself out there as if he's a rodeo clown for himself.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing, because he's got this other controversy. And so I agree. We can't adjudicate that right now. We have to wait and see how that plays out. The one thing to note is that he has not been charged criminally.
No, but it's a civil case.
It's a civil case. But let's assume that he's innocent. And if that issue doesn't prevent him from playing football, then the next question is, can he adapt to the Patriots culture? And I think we're going to find out very quickly, because he's kind of going 75 miles an hour with this social media stuff, and he's got to go zero if he wants to fit in with the Patriots.
The challenge that I think a lot of people have with social media is that there is no think before you speak, or think before you post, or think before you go live. There's just the, I want to do this, so I'm going to do this. And it really is completely impulse driven, where let's say you wanted to have a conversation with somebody, whether you're Antonio Brown and it was 10 years ago and I got to have a conversation with John Gruden. You're going to, you know, you might grab the coach after practice. You might barge into his office. You might, on a chance, wait for a film crew to show up and have a conversation with a film crew. But all of that sort of stuff isn't this immediate thing where your film crew is now in the palm of your hand and subject to any possible impulse that you have. That, and that's, I don't know, the, to me, when I think about a guy who had a specific personality that he was known for and came into town and really said, this is the Patriot way and I'm going to do it the Patriot way. Who do you think of when you think of that? I have exhibit A of the guy who was like, you know, this is the way it's done here. I'm going to fit right in.
Who is it?
Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Okay. Randy Moss to me is the perfect guy for, I'm all over the place and I'm known as a diva, but I'm going to come to Foxborough and this is who I'm going to be. And I think he sort of refashioned his career a little bit at that point and had a great year.
Tom Brady
threw for 5,000 yards. Moss, who everybody had said, this guy's a cancer, this guy's a headache. All of a sudden, Moss is like, this guy's an amazing player. And they're one acrobatic David Tyree catch away from a completely unblemished season. And they showed that on ESPN last week. ESPN was celebrating, patting itself on the back for its 40th anniversary. And they showed that David Tyree catch. I believe it was in the top 10 plays of the ESPN era. And when you watch it, and what year was that? That was 07, end of 07. 12 years later, it's just an astonishing play.
Yeah, it really is. Man, I wish I'd seen that top 10 plays. I didn't see that.
But it wasn't plays. It was it
of the era.
It started out as plays, and then it materialized into dynasties. And okay. So, I mean, you got into things like, oh, it's the UConn team winning 90 in a row. which isn't quite a play, but I would like to see straight plays.
Yeah.
And I was moderately okay. There are a few things in there that they didn't mention. One, Kirk Gibson's home run was way late, like as in maybe in the 30s. Like that's a really seminal play. Then the other one that didn't get any love at all was the Vince Young show in the 2006 Rose Bowl. I'm like, when I think about things that are kind of era defining that everybody watched, those are two things that for me would be higher on the scale.
Well, that's because this is a United States ESPN ranking.
It's not Lauren Fox Southern California rankings. But it should be. It should be. So anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Bedford High School football coach Zach Matthews. Fresh off a 41-7 win over Wyndham. I should be more confident when I speak. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen are here, and we are joined by the all-new Bedford High football coach Zach Matthews, fresh off a 41-7 win in the season opener over Wyndham. So, Coach Matthews, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Coach, congrats on that performance. What were some of the highlights from your perspective of the team's performance in that season opener?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the things we focused on, I was really happy with our mindset coming out. I was extremely pleased with how the defense played. I thought, you never know when you're playing a triple option team. And so Wyndham, you know, running triple option now, we had to play responsibility football on defense. And I thought our kids did a tremendous job kind of taking care of each of those segments. Offensively, I was really happy how we settled in and kind of came out in the second half. You know, first half, I think, you know, have some execution errors. Things are kind of back and forth. And second half, you make some adjustments, come out, and, you know, some of those run game plays start to pop for us. And we were excited about how the kids responded after halftime.
Yeah, they really did there have a strong second half. And one of the things we talked about on the broadcast that really jumped out as one of the stories of the game was Wyndham's aggressiveness on fourth down. They went for it 13 times, but only converted on three of those attempts. Were you surprised by how often they went for it on fourth down, and were you happy with how your defense dealt with all those fourth down situations?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely surprising as early as they started going for it. You know, based on some film study, I think they're having some issues right now with the long snapping position. And so I think, you know, I could be wrong, but I think a lot of that has to do with they're struggling a little bit to get the ball back there on time. And so if you have a snapper that's having trouble getting the ball back there quickly, you have a really high chance of having things blocked. And so I think after the first two times they came out, the snaps weren't so hot. I think we had a chance to get a hand on some things. And then you look at the field position, and a couple of times they punted. I think it was only a difference of 10 or 15 yards in field position. So, you know, I can't speak for Jack, but I would say that probably, you know, as that game went on, the score kind of separates a bit, and you look at it and saying, well, if we punt, we're going to maybe get 15 yards difference in field position. And I think they just started rolling the dice. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm okay with that. I feel good about our defense, obviously, and I'll take the short field anytime we can get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're joined by Coach Zach Matthews of the Bedford High School football team. And you mentioned the run defense a little bit earlier. Wyndham finished with only 125 yards on 40 carries, which is only 3.1 yards per carry. Of course, they had that one long touchdown run on fourth down. But what were the keys to the Bedford defensive front there against the run?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, you know, they're running some triple option concepts. And whenever you play an option team, kind of similar to how you approach it when you play a wing T team, I think everybody's just got to do their job. And so, you know, you have a dive player, you have a quarterback player, and you have a pitch player. And, you know, look at a kid like Jack Grogan. I mean, Jack Grogan had a great night last Friday night and really just took care of that dive for us. So with the two D tackles and what he did inside, we were really able to stop their dive. And they really tried to have to, you know, use the quarterback or pitch the ball out. But guys were just consistent in their run lanes. And like you said, you know, there was really one long run, and I think, you know, we blitzed on that play and kind of get out of our lanes, and we allowed a big play. But the rest of the night, I think there wasn't a whole lot of room for their kids to find on the ground.
Yeah, and on the other side of it, Coach, the Bulldogs averaged just shy of 7.5 yards a carry and had four different players cross the goal line on a rushing touchdown: Axton, Grogan, Elliott Scaling. What was it in game one that allowed your team to do so well carrying the ball?
Well, I mean, you know, first and foremost, we've got you know, we've got some really good kids up front there. I mean, we start four seniors up front and one junior. Three of those kids obviously played for the team last year and played in the state championship game, so they played a lot of football and they've seen a lot of different fronts. So I think we're pretty talented up front, and that's a big part of it. I would say the other piece, you know, Wyndham's a very aggressive defensive team. I think you guys probably noticed, and throughout the course of the game, they're sending a lot of pressure. There's a lot of blitzing. There's a lot of guys in the line of scrimmage, and we really just tried to approach it with some patience last week. And we said to the kids, you know, they're going to put a lot of guys on the line of scrimmage. If we can sort out our blocks and make some slight adjustments, you know, we pop through that first level. There's not a whole lot of people left. And I think when you see that second half of the game, getting the kids settled down at halftime, talking about some of those adjustments, and now all of a sudden you handle some of those guys at the line of scrimmage, you pop it back through. And, you know, we're lucky enough to have some special kids with some speed who get them into the secondary, and they were able to finish off those runs.
Hey, Coach, one of the plays that I remember where you talk about one of those blocks downfield was the touchdown run from Ellie, where Helton got down the field and had a big block, and then it looks like the two of you had a nice moment celebrating the block that he had. What was that moment like for you to have that connection with Helton on the field after he made that huge block?
Well, I mean, and that's one of the big things. Yeah, you're exactly right. That was a huge play for us, huge momentum play for us. I think the biggest piece behind that play is that's one of the things where we talked about having some patience. And, you know, nobody else would know this, you know, but that was actually a pass play we had called. And what was impressive to me about that play is our sophomore quarterback, Joe Michael, saw the pressure look. We had worked on it during the week, saw the pressure look, and checked to a run kind of opposite the pressure. And so, you know, there was a lot more that went into that play, just, you know, obviously that one piece, but it was special in the fact that we recognized the front. We had worked on it in practice. You know, sophomore quarterback makes a check at the line of scrimmage, and then you get the block afterwards. I think that was one of my favorite plays of the night as well.
Yeah, that's fun to know that was on an audible. So certainly an impressive decision there from Joe Michael. Now, what about areas of improvement? Anything you've been focused on this week with the team in practice to try to get ready for week two?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you come out of week one, I always say this, I think very rarely do you seem to see a team come out offensively, you know, hitting on all cylinders in week one. I think that's very difficult, especially with our shorter preseason this year. That was tough. So I think what we're looking at is a little more consistency on the offensive side of the ball. I couldn't have been any more pleased with the defense, and that's pretty typical for football seasons. You see defenses coming along a little faster than offenses, but looking for some cleaner execution on the offensive side of the ball. Like I said, I was happy with how we settled in the second half. I'd like to see us tonight, you know, kind of settle in and play a little bit better football in the first half and take advantage of some of those opportunities.
Now, one of the goals you mentioned in the preseason was taking care of home field, winning the four home games. And so you check off the box in week one with the home victory against Wyndham. Now week two, you go on the road to Concord. What do you see as some of the keys to the game in week two?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is how our kids get on the bus and you know, and get off the bus, maintaining that focus. I think it's easy to get motivated. It's easy for kids to get ready when you're talking about first home game and you're right there. I think it's a totally different situation when you have to get on a bus and you're going to somebody else's field. I think that takes a different amount of focus.
Here with Bedford High football coach Zach Matthews. And Coach, you're new to town, Bedford, and this is I think unique as things change and attitudes toward the game change. Bedford is truly a football town. In fact, yesterday I went to pick up my daughter from cross country practice and there was a freshman game, a great crowd, a full parking lot. How does it compare being in Bedford to where you were before?
I mean, it's hard to compare. I think you can't really compare the two. I mean, one of the reasons why I was extremely interested in this job and I'm excited to be here is the fact that, you know, everybody in the community really cares about our program and cares about our kids. There's a ton of support. I mean, it was what blew me away last week about the first game is just the student support was unbelievable. You know, you look there last week, our student section was packed. You know, I think our kids do a great job at the high school supporting each other and all the activities, you know, not only the football program, but absolutely the support of the football program is huge. We love seeing people come out. You know, it makes it exciting to do your job, and it makes it exciting for the kids to get out there and be able to have so many people interested in what they're doing.
Well, and a lot of that has to do with the youth football program because you have so many kids coming up through the ranks who have seen the older kids or who know them, or little brothers, little sisters, you name it. The football program here is extremely strong. From what I understand, your son's playing as well. How does he like it so far?
Yeah, absolutely. He's having a blast. I think it's been great for us, you know, moving into town, kind of being new. He jumped into the football program and, you know, can't say enough nice things about what the youth football program does, providing a solid foundation for kids in our community. You know, my son's been having a blast. Obviously, they've had a lot of success, you know, at the lower levels as well. And I think, you know, we're only as strong, our high school program's only as strong as our youth program. And when you look at our youth program, I think there's a solid foundation being laid. The kids are having, you know, a great time and winning a lot of games. And I think that that success just helps, you know, permeate the whole program. And when you start talking about success at the lower levels, kids get excited about taking the next step and moving up a level. It's great to go down and watch, you know, Bulldogs of all different ages having success and really enjoying the game.
Well, Coach, again, it was fun to watch your group in Game 1 set the foundation for the beginning of the season. So good luck against Concord in Game 2, and we look forward to chatting with you soon.
Great. Thank you.
You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And we are not being compensated for our time.
Nope.
I just wanted to make that eminently clear.
Or our names. Or images.
But that's okay. We're willingly doing this. The challenge that the NCAA has currently, if you have been following the news at all. So, as usually happens, and Hansen made reference to California earlier when we were talking about some of the great sports moments of all time.
After you made reference to it multiple times.
Right.
In your own personal top 30.
All the great sports moments happen in the Golden State. Everything else is secondary. I'm joking. but so California has now, their assembly and the Senate both passed unanimously a rule that would allow NCAA athletes to hire agents and allow college athletes to earn money from the use of their names, images, and likenesses, which in a society such as ours, where, I don't know, you think about where the lines are drawn. So like you could be 15 years old and be a YouTube celebrity who records football videos and profits from the ad revenue that exists on those videos, whether it's on YouTube or Instagram or you name it. And theoretically, even though you're applying your trade doing something different that's related to what you already do, technically you're a professional because you're accepting money and now you've lost your NCAA eligibility. We're in an age where the lines really are blurred between a lot of things. I mean, and there's, what if you're a TV star or a rap star who's 16 or 17 and happen to be pretty good at football too? Now you have to put the other career away so that you can play college football? Like, how does that even make any sense at all? So the NCAA, as you would expect, because they have a lot of money on the line, the NCAA has pushed back rather hard against the state of California.
Yeah, they have. And it's just
hypocritical word salad, really, if you ask me.
It's unbelievable. Yes. It's laughable. They are just so scared.
Right.
Of they are, any changes to their monopoly.
And that's what it is. It's the NCAA, from the stat that I just read off air, is a $14 billion with a B dollar industry. Like, this isn't a mom and pop thing. And the notion of amateurism among college athletes, frankly, is a joke. Because, okay, if I'm a student studying molecular biology at Clemson, I don't even know if Clemson has a molecular biology department, but I have to imagine they do. I work out in the regular student gym. I go to the regular student cafeteria. The students that are playing football at Clemson work out in a vastly different gym with supervised training. They are eating vastly better food than I am if I am a student earning a degree. And don't think for a second that college football players are making their decisions on where to go to school based upon the academics of a specific school. They're making their decisions on where they're going to school based upon what you would hope that a child would do if they're 17, or child/adult, depending on their age. But you're hoping that they're making their decisions based upon, this is my chosen career path. And in this case, we're not studying accounting or engineering and thinking that it's going to hook us up with the best possible job with, I don't know, Deloitte or whoever. I'm thinking of it like my next step is football. What is going to get me closer to the NFL? A college with a better training table, a better gym. But the notion that these student athletes, first of all, that they're at the college level, that they're truly student athletes, they go to school. But there is certainly a fine line between their school, their student responsibilities and the student responsibilities that a student who's in the general student population would have. And so in a manner of speaking, they've been getting paid for a long time. The other thing is they do get scholarships, but outside of that, the NCAA is just raking in money hand over fist on the backs of the athletes.
Right. And they're just treating the athletes different, those students different than the other students. Really, if you're a molecular biology student at Clemson, he or she can profit however he or she wants, whether it's related to his or her studies or something else. It's America.
Let's say I'm a molecular biology student at Clemson, and I don't know. I don't even know a company. I don't know. Johnson & Johnson hires me as an intern to, I'm going to use.
Or maybe they're even going to pay him.
Here I am. I'm going to say they hire me as an intern to, quotes, air quotes, play molecular biology in the summer.
Right.
Or play mechanical engineering in the summer. I'm getting paid there. Does that mean I lost my college eligibility to then study molecular biology or engineering?
No.
So why, if I'm a college football player now, am I exempted from any ability to profit off of anything that's related to me?
Yes.
While the school does?
Yes, you can't do that.
And even
it would be unconstitutional for you to do that.
Well, years ago, Ed O'Bannon fought it. And you and I have talked about it. I don't know that we've ever talked about it on air. I have a college football fantasy league that I play with a bunch of buddies. And the league years ago, Yahoo or CBS Sports or whoever, made the league a pay league where you could pay X dollars and they would tabulate the stats and everybody had a name. There was Matt Leinart or Reggie Bush or whoever, speaking of profiting off your off playing in college. But you had all these names and you could draft the names. Ed O'Bannon.
So it's like a college fantasy league.
It's college fantasy league. It's a blast. We do Big Ten, Pac-10. We used to do Notre Dame. But now it's just Big Ten, Pac-10. Those two going against each other. And nobody knows who anybody is. You just draft a team and know that I'm going to finish last. And that's that. But which is different from the NFL fantasy league. But that's another story. So, but we had this league and it started out as this. We're tabulating everything by hand. And it was this old school, like, Excel spreadsheet that before Google Docs, like, you're passing around an Excel spreadsheet, email it to the next guy. He enters his stuff in. You're on the honor system. Do you win? Do you lose? Whatever. Sometimes, and this was, what, 10, 12 years ago, it was hard to get stats. And you're like, okay, I can't find the stats for Stanford against Chattanooga. Like, this is tough. Then we had this amazing thing that made it like the NFL where it tabulated everything for about 2 or 3 years. And Ed O'Bannon, who was a forward at UCLA, his brother Charles also played there. Ed O'Bannon had a great point. Why shouldn't I be able to profit if UCLA is selling Ed O'Bannon jerseys and T-shirts and jerseys and whatever? And he won. And our fantasy football league went, see ya, didn't exist anymore. Probably about 4 years of us manually tabulating everything. And then we go into now this, or I think it was last year. Now everything is back in, I think it's in Yahoo where I can access everything. But it's the same sort of deal. Somebody somewhere is profiting off of using the names of these athletes within this league. But why shouldn't the athletes get a cut? They're the ones who are actually running the football, passing it, catching it. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, and Ed O'Bannon was a pioneer in this area, and of course we had the pleasure of interviewing Mike McCann about the book that he wrote with Ed O'Bannon about that path that he took, and that is really one of the things that has led to where we are now in California, and all the lawmakers in California agree that this is fair and just, and it's what we need to do in the 21st century. The NCAA is still stuck in the 20th century, and so this is the big turning point for them. And instead of making all these crazy accusations against California as if what they do if they pass this law is somehow wrong and should not be done, and they're using words like unconstitutional. The NCAA is the one that, of course, has been restraining trade left and right for decades. So it's time for them to get into the 21st century. And thankfully, there was that one quote in the article that I was just looking at where a spokesman for the NCAA claims that what they want to do is now look at this on a broad scale, all 50 states. And so they're saying, California, please don't pass this law. We want to handle this ourselves on a national scale. Well, who could really trust that they'll handle it well? But hey, maybe they're going to realize that this has to be done. And so they'll come up with new policies that don't treat these athletes like they're not living in America, where you've got the other students next to them making money however they want. You've got athletes in other sports like tennis who are already professionals at age 16 or 17. So it's just a backwards approach that they've had for a long time. And, you know, California is sort of putting their feet to the fire.
Right. California is doing that. The NCAA is really on its heels. And it's rare in 2019 that something passes unanimously. And it's rare when it's legislators on both sides of the aisle that are behind it. And there's an assemblyman from California, Kevin Kiley, who says, forget shoe deals and video games. NCAA athletes can't make a little money over the summer coaching youth sports, can't promote their social media, can't model athletic wear, can't accept groceries or help with rent or equipment. When in the line, and we've all seen it, these stories about a player's family member is sick and they need to fly home. And a lot of NCAA players don't come from families with means. And they're looking at it, regardless of whether the ticket is the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball, they're looking at it like, this is my ticket to an education. And a lot of players take that very seriously. And a lot of schools take that very seriously. But we've seen it over and over and over again where somebody helps with a plane ticket and the NCAA says, nope, sorry, you've lost your eligibility.
Illegal benefit.
And, okay, you have the choice. Do you follow a rule or are you a human being?
Right.
Plain and simple. So Assemblyman Kiley says, when a line in the sand is enforced obsessively, excessively, and to the point of absurdity, that's usually a sign it doesn't belong there.
That's a good word for it.
And
absurdity.
It really is. The NCAA is saying that this would restrict interstate commerce, whereas now the people on the side of the players are saying that, okay, NCAA, your threat is that you are going to have a 49-state NCAA and the California schools can do their own thing.
Right. If you
like,
do this,
that doesn't restrict interstate commerce?
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind?
Are you crazy, NCAA? So if they do this, then you just ban them forever. Oh, you guys, you can't participate in postseason tournaments anymore.
Good.
You're out.
Ban them.
Yeah.
Ban them. Honestly, they don't win any championships anyway. It really doesn't matter if you ban them from everything.
I'm
talking about the California schools. They don't.
Right, of course.
As far as in the revenue sports. In the non-revenue sports,
water polo.
Water polo, volleyball, horseshoes. California schools do great. Well, I mean, but, you know, everybody always wants to know what happens football, basketball. Well, not a whole lot of Sweet 16ing and not a whole lot of BCSing. So,
at least these days.
Nope, not these days. But yeah, it's anyway. So yeah, I think we both know how we feel about that. I really do. The key word in that quote, and you hit it right on the head, is absurdity.
Yep.
Like the fact that the NCAA can sit there with threats and straight faced say that their trade is being restrained when repeatedly this has gone to court and the courts have said that the NCAA is in itself basically one giant antitrust violation.
Right.
Like, you know, and I don't know. Then that brings a greater question on, all right, the NCAA, that happens. Major League Baseball is 2 years away from the collective bargaining agreement expiring. What happens then if somebody gets an inclination about taking away baseball's antitrust exemption?
Right.
I don't know. I have my hands spread wide and my palms out, and I'm the shrugging shoulders emoji right now.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately,
I'm not the face palm.
We might have to wait a few years because the California bill is going to go into effect in 2023,
mm-hmm.
right? So we'll see how things go. But one of the high profile athletes who's been a big supporter of that is LeBron James. And he may be a segue into one of our other topics. I know you wanted to talk about Taco Tuesdays.
How can you trade? Like, first of all, if anybody's going to trademark Taco Tuesday, it's Taco Fall.
Yes.
Yes. Like, nobody else would get to do that. So that's one thing. The second thing is just the absurdity. You have a legal background. How, like, we've been Taco Tuesdaying as long as I can remember. And I know that his request to trademark Taco Tuesday is gone. But if you were an attorney, would you have taken that case?
Well, I didn't understand it, so I pulled up a couple articles, and the quote that came out that now it makes sense to me is LeBron's representatives have said that what he was trying to do was not actually get the trademark, but make sure that whatever he does in social media now is not some sort of restraint or interference with somebody else's trademark. So he's trying to make sure that what he wants to do on social media, he can do freely and nobody's going to sue him for infringement.
Okay.
So I saw one of his videos. He did this like 45-second video at his house with Anthony Davis and his family celebrating Taco Tuesday. And so apparently this is one of his things. I didn't know about it, but he wants to be able to run with it on social media and not face any lawsuit.
Right. I don't think anybody would have sued him based upon Taco Tuesday.
Seriously. Yeah.
I did see a comment in the comment section of one of the cesspool of the internet sports sites saying that if you really were smart, you'd trademark Taco Thursday and make that a thing.
Yeah.
Like, why not? Why does it doesn't like if you're me, tacos are every day.
Exactly.
And occasionally multiple times a day.
Let's not discriminate.
No, tacos are every day. And yeah, I also found a really amazing taco location on Spruce and Beach in Manchester.
Okay, so you are going to reveal it.
No, it is. But yeah, it's hidden. Let's just say that. It is a true diamond in the rough on the taco front. That is all. So yeah, but they were not open on Tuesday when I was over there. But I will probably eat dinner there tonight. Really good. Really good. And I'm getting hungry now because, yeah, again, I could eat tacos every meal. Although, yeah, yesterday I texted you. I was in a moment of distress.
Not smart.
No. I had gone to lunch with my wife because she was heading out of town. And she wanted to just grab something quick. So we went to a Chinese food establishment and ordered a lunch special, which comes with a ton of food.
Right. It's a variety that's really going to fill you up.
It gives you soup, an appetizer. It gives you rice, fried rice, and it gives you the entree, and it's under $8. Like, it's one of the best deals going. It appears that everybody's found out about it because it was actually pretty full yesterday. But so I go there, and I'm thinking I might have a little bit of a window between going to lunch there, and I had a lunch meeting after after that. The smart move would have been to go to the Chinese restaurant and eat sushi.
Yes.
Like, grab like a spicy tuna roll and just treat it like it was an appetizer. No, I went full lunch and special. And by the time all was said and done, I had like 5 minutes to eat before I had to run off to the next meeting. So I was like my dog when I put down the food in front of him. Like, I think people tables over could hear me eat. I was like that dead set on, I need to get all this food down. So then I go to another breakfast place in town immediately thereafter. And I had not had the French toast there. And I'm thinking I'm going to get a couple slices of like Wonder Bread or Pepperidge Farm. No, these slices were
like more like Texas toast.
They were thick. They're thicker than a 2x4. And so go with two of those with caramelized bananas on top. Like,
such an amateur move for such a wise gentleman.
I felt like I wanted to die. I mean, I don't know. I'm 185 pounds. Not meant to put, like, I can put it away, but I know what I feel like if I do that. And yeah. So the advice is do not go back to back. And then so for I tell both my kids, hey, this is what I ate for lunch. And they're like, oh, really? You got Chinese food? So that was what they ate for dinner. But I limited myself to was steamed dumplings. There you go.
There you go.
That's the Hanson.
That's
right
smart
there.
Right there.
Yeah, steamed dumplings. So anyway, yes, too much sometimes is enough. You can really, yeah, I destroyed the spread. Yeah, and I don't recommend doing that back-to-back. They're fine by themselves, but, I mean, we'll get an opportunity to do more of the same this weekend. The Glendy is taking place, the Greek Orthodox Church on Hanover Street. Always a memorable occasion if you like Greek food. It is, and I can say this having been to Greek festivals around the country, and it's true, Glendy is the best. Best food, best atmosphere, like best Greek festival. I've probably been to six of them, different places. Glendy's the best in my small sample size. So is what it is. What else do we have on our list? We had other NFL stuff we were going to talk about.
Yeah, we could get into week one of the NFL.
Yeah.
We're back now in full swing. A couple of the storylines. First, you got to start with the Patriots.
No, actually, no, we don't. We're going to start with the Bills.
Okay.
Because as I will quote from Harry Kozlowski, the national media is vastly underestimating the Bills. I went to sleep on the... I got back from Staten Island at about 2 in the morning on Sunday. Woke up to my dog doing donuts on the bed on Sunday morning at about 7. And so by the time... Really, I mean, if you think about it, if you're not at a watering hole, one of the best things about football season is naps. Like, you lay down on the couch and somehow it becomes completely acceptable if you're napping during a football game. Where the rest of the time, it's like, your nap is not sacred. During football season, the nap is okay. So I go to take a nap and the thought popped into my head. I throw the Bills-Jets game on. I'm like, oh, it's 16-3. I'm going to text you, be like, yep, the national media is vastly underestimating the Bills. And I wake up and it's 17-16 Bills.
What
and
a comeback.
Somebody has been thrown through a table yet again.
Yeah, well, that
Bills Mafia.
Yeah, the Bills Jets game was going to be on my top five storylines, but
so
I was thinking of
it
more from the Jets perspective because they're up 16-0, and then what happened is the key there. Maybe while you were sleeping, Mosley, their linebacker, got hurt, and then their defense fell apart. The Bills come back and win 17-16, and then now the news is out that your boy Sam Darnold has mono.
Yes.
Out for several weeks. So really any shot that the Jets had at a maybe they get to 8-8, it's very unlikely now. I think they're probably finished. But Le'Veon Bell looked decent.
Le'Veon Bell looked good. Yeah. It's I don't know. It's tough when you go in and you think you have the second year quarterback who showed flashes of brilliance last year and now all of a sudden he's on the shelf and they originally thought he had strep. He lost a few pounds. And so he's not only going to have, I'm talking about Darnold, he's going to have the issue of having mono and getting better from that, but then he's going to have to sort of get himself back to full strength as quickly as he can. And he has the fact that he's young on his side, but it's no joke. Like, it knocks you flat.
Yeah, and so they're in a tough spot with him dealing with that, Mosley out. So Jets, the arrow on the Jets is pointing down. You could say that the arrow on the Bills is pointing up. We'll see. That young running back Singletary, he was helpful. But you know, Josh Allen does Josh Allen things. So we'll see how they look moving forward. The other young quarterback who had a big week was Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
Wow.
That was fun to watch.
9-10.
That was fun to watch. And
five touchdowns.
Simply the fact that he just, I don't know, you look at that game that they lost in the playoffs last year and how he was impacted by that and how you can turn the other way after losing a game like that in the playoffs on a really public stage and looking very bad doing it. And granted, they played the Dolphins, so it wasn't like they were playing against a great defense, but still.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is, the Dolphins, with their recent trades during preseason, the talk of, well, maybe this team is actually tanking like some of the NBA teams have done. And so now all of a sudden here in week two, we've got this 18.5-point line with the Patriots going to Miami where they often struggle. Last year they were on the wrong end of the Miami miracle. But, I mean, This is almost unprecedented territory to have a near 3-touchdown favorite in the NFL. This is not college. This
right.
is the NFL.
Right.
This is the league of parity and all professionals, but everybody's expecting them to go in and smoke the Dolphins because Dolphins aren't even trying.
the Dolphins are the what appears to be the first NFL team who is outwardly just going to tank the season.
Yep.
And we've seen it in Major League Baseball. We saw the Astros benefit from it with some high draft picks that they then turned into Springer and Bregman. And granted, the Astros made some good trades. And in baseball, you do have a strong possibility that you can draft a guy and the guy flames out, because there are steps between high school and college and the major leagues. So you have to draft well and you have to develop well. So baseball, it's not as easy to do it in. The NBA, time will tell on whether the process is actually a functional thing. Again, you have to draft well. Like, and I think Joel Embiid is a good draft pick. I don't think Ben Simmons is a number one draft pick, and Markel Fultz definitely isn't. So you look at that and you say,
and
well,
then Okafor.
Yeah.
He was a top two
that's right.
pick, top three pick.
So you look at that and you say, all right, they attempted to build a team. They had the right idea, but it didn't work because their drafting was bad. Very bad.
So it is strange to see it in football where one draft pick usually isn't as powerful as it is in the NBA. I mean, a top one or two pick in the NBA is a game changer. You only have five guys on the court at one time. Football, you obviously have 11. If you get a franchise quarterback, excellent. So maybe they're thinking Josh Rosen and Fitzpatrick are just placeholders here. We're going to see if we can hit a home run in the draft next year. But like, outside of getting a franchise quarterback, you know, tanking the NFL is just not as likely to be successful as it is in the NBA.
Well, and then I think about it and I say, all right, if you are truly doing that and you have one of the best left tackles in the NFL in Laremy Tunsil, why are you getting rid of that, which could be a real nice building block? All right, you tank and you get a good running back in the draft and you get a good quarterback in the draft, and now you can sort of build things a little from your skill positions out. You had somebody in the trenches who was among the best in the league. Why are you getting rid of him?
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know. It's that whole thing is just utterly bizarre.
And then the flip side of that is, what is going on in Houston, where they trade Jadeveon Clowney away for what, a third rounder?
Yeah.
But then they trade a first rounder and more to get Tunsil.
Yes.
So they're just kind of spinning their wheels and losing trades left and right.
Yeah. Well, that's
they sell low and they buy high.
Sometimes, I don't know, the benefit of having a coach and a general manager instead of a coach slash general manager is that when you have two people, even if the coach is acting as a general manager in a lot of ways and saying, yes, I want that guy, go after him, or yes, give up that draft pick, or yes, you still have a check. And I don't know enough about the Texans to say either way, but those jobs are hard enough to do by themselves without doing both of them. And Bill O'Brien right now is doing both of them and getting fleeced and left. And
he also got fleeced by the Saints on Monday night.
Yeah. When you have Will Lutz kicking for you, that was also fun.
Yeah. That was a big kick.
Yeah. 58 yard kick to win that game. So, I don't know. Week one was interesting. It was fun. So you had the Patriots were a storyline.
33-3 against the Steelers.
Yeah.
I mean, they made them look like a college team. They couldn't do anything.
Was that picture of Ben Roethlisberger photoshopped?
I didn't see it. What was he doing?
He has a gigantic head.
He's a big guy.
I don't know. This is, I don't know. He has an absurdly large melon.
Yes, he does.
So
they look lost without Brown and Bell,
as they should,
because Stephon Gilmore took Juju out.
Yep.
And then he's trying to throw to Moncrief and Washington, and they just were not on the same page. They just weren't quite clicking. And wow. I mean, we've heard rumors this summer about the Patriots defense taking it to the next level, and they showed in week one that that's an accurate prediction.
Yeah, no, the Patriots defense look great. They just blow my mind. It's just utterly bizarre. And I think we've talked about this in the past, the kids in New England who think that this is normal, this is not normal. This is not even close to normal.
I mean, you're looking at the greatest coach in the history of American sports, the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL. So that 1-2 punch is absolutely not normal.
Okay, so what do you think if, let's say, you get a Peyton Manning or Brett Favre or Dan Marino? I'm just throwing out names of dudes.
Yes.
Do you think that any of them win six?
I think they could.
Okay.
But were any of them still playing at 42 with MVP-type numbers?
I feel like we're the guys on Saturday Night Live talking about the Bears. Is Belichick driving the bus? Yeah. Like, I feel like that's where this, like, I don't know. It's this bizarre next man up sort of feeling and philosophy where they're just, you lose Gronk? Okay, great. You just
who needs a tight end anymore?
We don't need one. We'll just get big wide receivers.
We'll just get better wide receivers.
But so thinking about Belichick, though, what makes Belichick, who is the head coach in Cleveland from 91 through 95 and not good, under 500, I mean, and part of it is the Browns, but it's not like the Patriots had a history of winning before Belichick was here, really. Is it a, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Does Brady win without Belichick?
Well,
or does Belichick win without Brady?
We may find out some insight into this with Belichick potentially coaching past Tom Brady. And so we'll see how he does with Stidham or whoever else is the quarterback. But I think what you have to look at is, you know, you last week we talked about the UNC soccer coaching ideals, the fundamentals of that program.
Yep.
And we you and I emailed about it before this show. I think Coach Belichick has his own list, and he sticks to them, to that list of core tenets, team philosophies, better than any coach, and he holds his players accountable according to that list. We don't know what the list is. We can predict some of the elements, but I think it does map on pretty closely to the UNC women's soccer coaches list.
Yep.
In terms of you put the team first, and maybe the one that is, that jumps out the most to me would just be discipline. I mean, Bill Belichick, he demands discipline from his team, no mistakes, no turnovers, but he obviously is the most disciplined coach himself with, we're taking this one day at a time, one game at a time. All of his players talk as if all they're thinking about is taking it one play at a time, one game at a time. And then you think about his discipline making personnel decisions. He does not get swayed by loyalty to an older player. It's all about who's going to help us win this year, what's the best group we can get together to cover all three phases. I mean, he's just the most disciplined coach you'll ever find.
And it's interesting, though, because he holds himself to that same standard, because it would be really easy for him to rest on his laurels and say, I've won six championships. I can say what I want. I can do what I want. Who are you to tell me what to say or do? And he still sort of plays to that same type, and doesn't he gives the media just about as much
as he has to.
As he has to. And that's it. And he's honestly, if I could choose people that I would sit down and have some beers with, he'd be, I don't even think he'd be on the list. Like, he's not a guy that I would sit there and be like, I want to go and sit down and talk to him. Maybe to learn about leadership, maybe to learn about coaching. Yeah. But as far as like a drinking buddy, no. But you think about, I think about how many times I'm in a conversation with somebody and I probably, and I know it's happened in the last hour, things that you say and you go, oh, I shouldn't have said that. He's on the podium in front of the media multiple times a week and stays on message every time and never really screws up.
Amazing
discipline. That's, I mean, and that's,
we're on to Miami.
Yeah.
We're on to Miami.
It's, I mean, you know, and everybody does it differently. Lou Holtz used to do it. I'm really worried about Appalachian State Teachers College. You'd be like, dude, you just beat USC by 18 points. Why are you worried about them?
Right.
But there are some coaches who that's their thing. And I think it's probably easier to get players to buy in. Okay, if you're 36 and 44 coaching for the Browns over the period of 5 years, your players are all kind of like same old Browns, same old this, same old that. you come here and granted, don't forget, he started out doing well. He was 11-5. Then he had a bad year. He was 5-11, or he was, I'm looking at it right now. He started, his first year was 5-11. Then he goes 11-5. The Patriots go on to win the Super Bowl that year. And once you've won one, now you can start getting buy-in because you have credibility because you've won one. And that's part of it too. And now they've won so many of them that it's easier for them, I think, if recruiting is a thing in the NFL, it's easier to recruit when a guy looks at it and says, I can go and win I can get my ring there. Like, I'm willing to do it to take a pay cut. I'm willing to do it for fewer snaps, fewer touches, whatever.
And he's built such a thorough culture that is so deeply ingrained in all of these veterans that people know, they see, hey, I have to adapt to the Patriot way or I'm not going to be a Patriot anymore.
And right.
And so I think you got to give so much credit to what he's done. But it is so fascinating because Brady's been there for all those Super Bowls, and you can't win Super Bowls without good players. But I think what he has done to help those players become better and buy into the system, I mean, it's just a lot has to be said for that.
They still did win 11 games with Matt Cassel.
Right.
So, I mean, you know.
So that's a.
But they didn't make the playoffs that year, but they did. So, I don't know. I think eventually it's going to be a very interesting leadership book. I wonder, and I don't know, are he and Brady playing chicken?
Right.
Like, or are they just going to hold hands and go off into the sunset together?
I'm going to play till I'm 45. I'm going to coach till I'm 75.
Right.
Fine, like, I'll play till I'm 48.
46, 47. Like, you know, is Tom Brady Belichick's security blanket? I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I just looked at the list. I think Belichick's about 50-some-odd wins behind Don Shula.
I don't think he stays that long.
I think he does.
I don't.
I think that's going to drive him. He's going to become the winningest coach of all time.
And then Tom Brady will be 117 years old.
He'll either have Brady or Stidham or somebody else. He's going for the record. He's going to get it.
Or he'll pull some random dude out of the sixth round that nobody thinks anything about, and all of a sudden, this guy will be the guy.
Yeah, just give it 5 years. He'll have it.
You know, I don't know. So, anyway.
I mean, they get to play Harry's Bills twice a year and the tanking Dolphins, the Jets without a quarterback. They're going to win at least 12 or 13 games every year.
17 games. They will win 17 games every year. Easily. Done.
On average.
On average. So, all right. With that said, yeah.
Speaking of wins, Coach Winning got number 200.
Oh, yeah. We got it. And to your share the comment earlier that you made.
No.
I don't know how she has that many wins being that young.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of wins we're not talking about a Major League Baseball season here. We're talking about a much shorter season.
No, that's a lot of wins.
We had
soccer,
to do the math. They play 16 games a year.
Right, and then there are playoff games.
But that is a really high winning percentage to get to 200 wins.
Yes.
You know, she's a young coach, so
yeah.
Very, very impressive. Congrats to Coach Winning.
Absolutely. And, yeah, always fun to see what the girls' soccer program's up to. I believe they won 8-1 on Monday. So
they're now 5-0.
They're 5-0. They're another one that it's like next man up.
We're going to broadcast some soccer games on BCTV.
Yes.
The first one is going to be September 20th, Friday. Next Friday, boys home against Wyndham.
Oh, there
so
you go.
Get ready for that on TV at 6 o'clock.
I still haven't told you which games I'm doing. I'm scared.
Yeah, so, you're not broadcasting that one. You're going to be in October.
I will be? Why?
Well, you might. We'll see.
I don't know. All right. I'm not doing that one
right,
next time.
You're not doing that one.
Because I'm gone. Anyway, so thank you to our guest, Bedford High football coach Zach Matthews. And thanks to Hanson for putting up with me for the last hour and change. Thanks to Bill, Colleen, and Harry, and George here at the studio. And thanks to you guys for listening. Have a wonderful sports week. And we will catch you next week. You're listening to Fox on Sports.